Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
From Langra University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for March 25th, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the energy market with Dan O'Brien of Kansas State University's Department of Agricultural Economics. And University of Illinois Farm Business Farm Management Specialist Gary Schnicke will discuss crop insurance in the new farm bill. And Don Day will have agricultural weather. It's all on the Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Here's how futures settled on this Tuesday afternoon. Hard red winter May wheat, 791 and three quarters, up 22. July, 790 and a quarter, up 22 and a quarter. Soft May wheat settled at 708 and a quarter, down six and a quarter. July, 711 and three quarters, down five. May corn settled at 486 and a half, down three and a half. July, 491 and a quarter, down three and a quarter. December, 486 and a quarter, down one and a half. May soybeans settled at 1428, up two and a half. July, 1401 and a quarter, up two and a half. November, 1188 and three quarters, up four and three quarters. May soybean meal settled at 463.70, up 170. May soybean oil settled at 40.74, down 10 cents. April live cattle settled at 144.65, up 50 cents, make that 55. And by the way, these are last trades on the Merck side. March feeders, 177.40, up 70. And April lean hogs at 121.65, down $3. And those are Tuesday afternoon's settlements and last trade from the Chicago Board of Trade. Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says U.S. hard red winter wheat areas will likely receive some showers. The first rain event is expected Wednesday into Thursday morning, with moisture totals of 0.05 to a quarter inch. A second event is expected April 1st and 2nd, with rain totals of 0.1 to a quarter inch in the High Plains region, and 0.2 to 0.75 inch in eastern portions of the production region. Frost and freezes are expected deep into the southeastern U.S. tonight in portions of the interior southern parts of Mississippi, Alabama, and parts of Georgia. Winter wheat damage is expected, but only to vegetative growth. Look for warming in the U.S. Midwest late Wednesday into Friday that will result in some rainfall across the region, mostly Wednesday night and Thursday. Moisture totals will range from 0.1 inch to almost 0.7 inch, with a few locally greater amounts. Rising soil temperatures and net drying will help a few farmers put a little seed in the soil, but soil temperatures will not be at optimum levels, and some producers may wait for better germinating conditions. The bottom line for the U.S. includes little to no significant dryness relief in the central or southwestern plains during the coming week to 10 days. Temperatures will trend warmer for most areas east of the Rocky Mountains after Wednesday of this week. You're You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon, Wayne. Hello, Wayne. Well, we're having some technical difficulties getting Wayne on the telephone. Let's go ahead and see if we can go ahead and get him up. Wayne.
Hey, how's Dave?
And Dave is doing very well. Let's go ahead and jump right into the markets. And I want to start over on the livestock side, Wayne, because, boy, oh, boy, there was a red flag there, and that's minus $3 on the day in the lean hog market.
Yeah, it's rather uncharacteristic of the way the hogs have been acting of late. We're seeing some packers running into some negative processing there, and some people with the hog and pig report coming out this Friday just taking profits or going to the door. They had extra long exposure there, and I think that we just saw some liquidation. And then, of course, along with the move on down, well, of course, I'm sure we hit stops from protective stops and hit some more programs to kick stuff out.
I also think there might be a rumor in the marketplace. I think I picked up on this today that given the conflict between the U.S. and Russia, that Russia may decide not to take U.S. hogs, and I believe that they were going to take or had started taking hogs as of about March the 10th or thereabouts.
Yeah, and all of this backlash between the sanctions and sanctions to be done and a little fighting back and forth for the economy of how you're going to hurt people. Basically, this one come in and it hurt the hog farmer.
Turn our attention to the grains side of the equation. Soybeans, front month May, up 2.5 on the day, but that doesn't really begin to say how volatile the market was today.
Oh, I mean, you know, last night, very quiet, started in, and, you know, we shot up when you look here in May, 14.16 to 14.36, a 20-cent trading range, and you're only seeing 2 cents move there. That doesn't really put it in perspective as far as, you know, we want to look at things. So, you know, a lot up, a lot of down, a lot of question marks coming along the way, and I think that a lot of people wanting to keep a little volatility, a little bit of the action in this market. The fact is the funds were light buyers of beans today, also light buyers of corn, but not to the degree they have been as of late. And it's just a very touchy situation with everything that goes on. And, of course, then we were added to with Informa kicking out their numbers today also.
Yeah, and weren't those numbers both a little bit smaller in corn and beans?
Yeah, I mean, the corn numbers come in at 93 million acres. They've been 93.3 previously. And, of course, we had 95.4 last year in the beans. 81.2 compared to 81.3 previously. So, you know, but I mean, all in all, very much pretty close to where they were, but scaling back a little bit. And, of course, we keep hearing rumors of increased yield somewhat down in South America, and then, you know, they're shrinking, they're growing, they're doing whatever along the way. I know Michael Cordonnier, in fact, did kick up his yields a little bit from the week before on this week.
And very quickly, a word about the wheat.
The wheat, you know, we were set back, but we've done tremendous things in the wheat last few weeks. You know, if we do have an El Nino, that means a dry Australia. Australia is really big. We keep getting rain again, no rain again out in the west for what's going on out there for when the wheat comes out of dormancy. We'd like to see a little more rain out west.
Thank you much, Wayne.
Thanks, Dave.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, and he is in New Market, Indiana. Later this year, farmers will need to opt in for new crop insurance options. The options include ARC and PLC, two programs that producers are already familiar with, although they have been tweaked and updated by the new 2014 Farm Bill. Todd Gleason looks under the hood of ARC and PLC with University of Illinois Farm Business Farm Management Specialist Gary Schnicke.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined by Gary Schnicke, Farm Management Specialist at the University of Illinois, to take a look at the ARC and PLC decision that will be coming up this summer for many farmers and discuss the differences between those programs that are now in the 2014 Farm Bill and the 2008 Farm Bill, in particular the ACRE and the ARC program, because they're very similar and ARC came from ACRE.
Yeah, that's right. ARC is an extension of ACRE. It's a modification of ACRE, but in a lot of respects, it has many similarities to ACRE. They both base their guarantees on previous prices, previous yields, and previous prices. And as those prices go up and down, and yields go up and down, so will that guarantee. So, in concept, those two programs are very much alike.
And it's important, I suppose, to understand that ACRE and ARC are revenue protection programs, not price protection programs.
That's right. They both will make payments when revenue is below a guarantee. And obviously, revenue includes both price and yield. So in certain years, like the drought year would be a good example, ARC could make a payment because yields were low, but prices were high. And so the combination of those two could result in a payment, whereas if you had price loss coverage, prices were high, there would be no payment in that situation.
Can you take me through how ARC is figured to begin with? And I'm thinking about the five-year Olympic average.
All right. So ARC uses a five-year Olympic average of prices. So Olympic average takes the previous 5 years prices, throws out the high, throws out the low, averages the middle three, Olympic average of prices, Olympic average of county yields, multiplies them together, and the guarantee is 86% of that, those benchmark prices.
And this is considered a shallow loss program?
That's right, because if revenue falls below that, you will get paid, but there's a limit to how much you can get paid. And essentially, you can get paid 10% of the revenue. So you'll get paid from 86% down to 76%. So the limits right now in most of Illinois counties on corn would be somewhere in the $90 to $100 per acre range.
So ARC is a modified acre program, and there is no cost to it. That might be important because people probably remember that there was a charge.
There's a number of things that make the decision different in choosing ARC than ACRE. When you chose ACRE, you had to give up 20% of your direct payments. You also got loan rates reduced by 30%, and the decision was irrevocable when made. And so will ARC be, but under the old Farm Bill, you could always elect each year to go into ACRE if you wanted to. This won't be the same this time around.
But it doesn't have the costs that were associated with ACRE.
That's right. So, you know, this time, farmers and landowners will be choosing from ARC and PLC, and in neither case they're not giving up direct payments because direct payments are gone. So what will be happening this time around will be there will be that sort of straight-up choice between ARC and PLC.
Now, speaking of PLC, price loss coverage, it has a counterpart in the old 2008 program as well.
Yes, it does. It would be the old countercyclical program. So PLC would be the old countercyclical program. The several of the differences is, one, there will be a higher target price, reference price under the new bill. It'd be $3.70 for corn, $8.60 for soybeans. So those are higher than under the 2008 farm bill. And they will make payments when the market year average price falls below that target or reference price. And they'll make payments on base yield, which will be set during the sign-up period, and that will either equal the current base yields or yields that are used or an average from 2008 through 2012 times 90%.
You mentioned base. There will also be base acres, which is a change entirely from the previous farm bills, though producers will remember them from historical numbers.
Yep. So each farm now has, FSA farm has a base corn and base soybean acres, as well as some farms probably base wheat acres if you're in Illinois. Farmers will have a chance to update those acres to the average of 2008 to 2013 plantings, but payments under ARC and PLC will be based on those base acres. So it's not on planted acres, it's on what those base acres are.
So both the 08 and the 14 farm bills gave crop farmers a choice between revenue programs whose target prices moved up and down, right?
The target price under the 2008 bill was fixed. It was the trigger payment under corn was $2.33. It did not change. That is very similar to the current price loss coverage program. Acre program, the guarantee moved up or down.
Is there much of a difference then in summary between the old programs and the new programs? Acre versus countercyclical and ARC versus PLC?
Yeah, what you give up this time around if you choose ARC is less than what you would have given up if you chose acre. So if you chose acre last time, you had to give up direct payments and loan rate. You don't have to do that this time. It's much more of a level playing field between the PLC versus ARC decision.
Does it make the decision harder for a producer to make?
In some sense it is, because it makes the ARC program more attractive than acre program was. ARC will, its guarantee will be based on a 5-year average of prices.
The Olympic average, likely to be about $5.20 for the coming year, the 2014 crop, the year we're in now.
Compare that to a reference price of $3.70.
Producers have some work to do and some pencils to push.
That's right.
More from you as we make our way closer to the decisions, I suppose.
Yes, we will, and it'll be nice to see what FSA has to say about the regulations one of these days.
Thank you so much, Gary.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnitke is a farm business farm management specialist at the University of Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. This has been a Farm Doc Daily podcast.
Joining us for our look at the energy markets is Dan O'Brien of Kansas State University in Colby, Kansas. Good afternoon, Dan.
Hello, Dave.
Let's jump right into ethanol. It has been a very profitable thing all winter long. And if you look at monthly crush capacity numbers, you can see that ethanol production has been made at a fairly sizable clip. But I wonder if that will truly be the case going forward into the summer.
Well, the situation we're looking at right now is, of course, with high prices. Now, the futures prices themselves, as you look at them literally today, April contract, 297. You do see a decline down to May of 264, June 242. But we have really kind of a short-term spike situation. What's kind of gathering the attention of the market right now is that ethanol prices are actually over RBOB prices, which is not a very common occurrence at all, happening today, yesterday. And with that, I think you look for the causes. Strong exports overseas, particularly to Brazil, supply-demand situations, plant issues, et cetera, all coming into play. When you look at our estimate of what the profitability is for ethanol on a per-gallon basis, looking at a typical model Iowa plant, it would be spiking up here in March to about 95 cents per gallon. And as you say, we've been profitable really literally since about January, February of 2013. So a good time, literally, for the ethanol industry. How far will it go? Well, I guess a lot will depend on just where we go to in terms of both the sales price and the price of the input. Corn price has been holding about 460, 470, something like that in Iowa here in the month of March. So far, it's been about 465. If we have a large crop and we get some maintenance of ongoing demand, well, we could see pretty good profitability for ethanol through the year. A lot will depend on the corn price.
And I suppose also usage on at the fuel pump, too.
Without doubt. Again, domestic demand for fuels as well as international demands, as those two things tug at each other, that will have a lot to do in terms of the supply-demand forces gasoline prices. We get so used to talk about gasohol, et cetera. It's hard for me to undo that. But anyway, point is that at least at this point in time, it's a pretty positive picture for the ethanol market and for ethanol producers.
I suppose we don't generally, you and I, talk about DDGs that often, but it's probably worth noting with all that ethanol production, there was more DDG production, but DDG prices are actually having difficulty to go in counter to what the fundamentals are, and it's because of transportation issues.
Yes, that comes into play. And just looking at the raw numbers, we had a high in distillers' grains prices, at least dry distillers' grains coming out of, again, that central Iowa market, up to $2.99 back in the almost just about $300 per ton back in 2012. Well, we kind of trended down sharply. It had fallen off to near $150, $160 in February. Well, here in March now, with the recent spike, at least if we trust the numbers we're seeing, and they seem to be trustworthy out of normal USDA AMS sources, it looks like we've seen kind of a jump back higher again in DDG prices, up to about $241, $241.50 per ton at Iowa plants. That's up from 224 back at the beginning of March. And so, again, the trends we're seeing are affecting, I guess probably the most safe thing to say, Dave, is that we have a bit of an uptrend in distillers' prices as well. And, again, that all helps in terms of the profitability of an ethanol-producing plant.
Thank you, Dan.
Take care, David.
That's Dan O'Brien, and he is with K-State University out of Colby, Kansas. I'll be back in 2 minutes with a look at agricultural weather with meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. It's National Lobster Newberg Day. The dish was perhaps invented by Ben Wenberg, a sea captain in the fruit trade between Cuba and New York. He first demonstrated the dish at Delmonico's restaurant in New York City, where the creation was added to the menu as lobster a la Wenberg. Months later, after an argument with Charles Delmonico, Wenberg was banished from the restaurant, and Delmonico flipped a few letters in Wenberg's name on the menu, Lobster Newberg was born. It's also Pecan Day. In 1775, George Washington planted pecan trees, some of which still survive at Mount Vernon.
The trees were supposedly a gift to Washington from Thomas Jefferson. On this day in agricultural history in 1848, William Keith Brooks was born. An American zoologist, he was a champion for the conservation of the Chesapeake Bay oyster. In 1867, Ferdinand Runge died. He was a German chemist who developed a method for obtaining sugar from beet juice. And in 1914, Norman Ernest Borlaug was born. He was one who laid the groundwork of the so-called Green Revolution, the agricultural technological advance that promised to alleviate world hunger. And he developed a wheat-rye hybrid with higher yield and protein content. And that's this day in agricultural history. You are listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Cold and wet, wet and cold. I mean, you have your option of which forecast you like, but we don't want either of those. Anything else in your back pocket?
Well, you know, I can tell you that we are seeing some subtle little changes in the overall weather pattern across the lower 48 that will at least make it a little bit warmer at times. We see maybe a little less Canadian influence as we go through the last week of March here and into early April, but the Pacific now is going to be keeping us busy, throwing several systems our way that will traverse the country. Ahead of these systems, we'll have some nice warming trends. But behind it, we'll have 2 or 3 days of colder weather, and there's going to be some precipitation. So we gradually see temperatures getting warmer, but we don't see anything yet that would keep us consistently warmer, as spring is going to be very slow to get going.
So a week or so of 70-degree weather, upper 60s, lower 70s, and please no freeze at night, not on the horizon yet.
Not yet. Will we have some days that will warm up? We certainly will. It's just we're not going to be able to put more than one or two of those days in a row together.
So if it's going to be cool, then you get a tendency for the precip to go along with it, yes?
Exactly. And with the Pacific getting active and the Gulf of Mexico opening up a little bit more, there could be some good producers of precipitation with some of these systems as they move through.
Of course, and it looks like the drought is getting a little bit broader out west.
Well, it is, and I tell you, that's the one area that I don't see a lot of help, but a little bit of help. It's a pattern where what we've seen over the winter months is going to show itself again this spring. So the areas that have been wet and cold will stay that way, and vice versa, the drier, warmer areas, the southern plains in particular, that I'm concerned about, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas Panhandle area, those areas actually have a little bit of precipitation this week in their forecast, but more than anything, that is an area that I have concerns about this spring and into early summer.
So it's like the dome of prevention is over on the west side.
It definitely is. And it'll be those southern and southwest areas. I think the Dakotas, Nebraska, and the eastern and northeastern side of Kansas, those areas I think will be okay. As you go further west and south from there is where we're going to have some concerns.
Turn your attention internationally, areas of concern for you.
Well, in terms of if we were to look at South America, we see no real big delays down there that would be weather-caused. A fairly normal pattern going down there. If we go over to Europe, Europe is going to be a little bit active. Looks like it's going to be a pattern in the far western areas of Europe, Spain, France, England going to be a little bit on the wet side. But the Ukraine, western areas of Russia, eastern Europe a little bit warmer and drier.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And that is today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.